Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right.
New recording. Hello, everyone. Oh,
sorry. I didn't realize we'd started.
Well, yeah, we can cut that bit out.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Stalking Time for the Moon Boys. We're doing another on the road. And yeah. For regular listeners know, we did this a couple of podcasts ago.
Because we got such positive feedback, didn't we?
Yeah, everyone loved it. and so we're off again on the road. We're going to the same place.
Yeah, we're going to Suffolk.
Suffolk, where Tim's got a house. Let's just straightforwardly say that.
I think we said it before.
We've
got a loyal fan base.
We've stopped at a service station. I should make it clear that if anyone's interested in sort of creating narrative jeopardy, that it's a race against time, because Tim's got a wardrobe coming at 12:15. It's now presently about 10:47. Mm. We're still quite a long way from there, and the guy's just rung. He's from Dreams, the wardrobe company. Yeah. There was a bit of confusion because his name is David. So when he called, he couldn't hear him quite clearly. He seemed to be saying something about David. And given who we are, that could have been me or it could have been Bowie.
I didn't think about that, because I was a bit struck by the fact he said, it's David, and you kept saying me, as if there's only one David in the world.
Well, that's how I feel.
It was pretty obvious it wasn't you calling, because you were sitting next to me.
Yeah, and it's pretty obvious it wasn't David Bowie calling.
Have you noticed I've gone completely the wrong way?
So what you've done what I love about that is you're driving towards the sort of bit of a service station where there are places you could stay, which, like... always the most depressing places in the world.
The night in the Premier Inn. Somewhere in Essex at the moment.
Okay. No, we're not going to do that.
I can't find the way out.
Yeah, now we're in the HGV section. So,
and as you say, there is jeopardy because the guy from Dreams, who potentially our next sponsorship deal after McDonald's, is basically they had an order cancelled.
Right.
They're coming earlier.
Okay, you're going to tell this whole story.
Yeah,
you just told it to me and it was too boring for words.
And he's basically said, the long and the short of it, he said, if we're not there by 1:30, he will go.
Yeah, but when you just leave your wardrobe in your garden...
No, they don't do that. They have to get it into the house. I don't
know.
Okay,
I tell you, the thing you don't want to do is get stuck driving around a service station.
No, we're out now.
We're out now. And the other thing I'm going to tell you, listeners, which, you know, it's a little bit gross if you're listening to this early in the morning, but we really stopped. We stopped because I needed to do a poo.
Yeah.
And I think what was really interesting about that is that we've also got with us Chip, Tim's new puppy, who's replaced the sadly now gone Ace, Tim's previous dog. He's with us in the back. And so Tim had to stop for two people, essentially, to poo.
Yeah. The other race of Jeopardy was who would poo first, Chip or you.
Yeah.
And it was a tie.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was a tie.
Yeah. How do we know that?
Well, I don't know to the second, obviously.
Yeah.
But you both seem a lot happier.
Yeah, definitely. Chip's happier, I'm happier.
Yeah.
And have you got cough?
I've
or
are
you just coughing with disgust at the talk of poo?
It reminds me that my friend Piers, who we've mentioned a few
times... Oh, you mentioned
times,
no, it's only always that with
when
Piers.
I said you both feel a bit happier now, I don't know if I said this before, it's a small thing, but it sort of haunted us for the rest of our... In the lower sixth form...
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, someone nearly banged into me.
Going to Colchester and Ipswich?
Oh, yeah, sorry, I've gone the wrong way.
Oh, the Dreams thing is going. Your dream is fading.
I'm just upping the jeopardy, because the truth is...
Okay, this is a red light.
There isn't much jeopardy, because we're going to be there an hour before the Dreams guy, so I think...
Ruin the jeopardy.
By getting lost, I might help them. Mrs. Bateman, who's
that's a green light now. You know
Mrs.
that means
Bateman,
go.
Who is our art teacher,
yeah,
wrote a school report for Piers, because I think she was head of Lower Six or something,
yeah,
saying all these things, and then said in the thing, in the report... The good thing is you seem much happier now.
Right.
And I remember Piers always saying, like, what? Because at no point did I, like, was I unhappy before? And
right.
it dogged us for a long time, to this point where even today, if we're exchanging messages, I might say, by the way, you seem much happier now.
Right, right.
It's a sort of horrible thing to be told, isn't it? If you didn't feel... It's a disconcerting thing to be told.
Think the need to do a poo dogged chip.
Possibly. I don't think...
That's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I don't think dogs, despite that...
So there's something I'm going to bring up, though, which is going to tie this together absolutely brilliantly.
Yeah.
Now that we are talking about...
Right, we're on... Well, I found the road now.
Pooing. Which is, I can play it to you when we get there. I'll be too difficult to find in the car.
Oh, right.
I'm going to play it to you, which is, I found a clip of Bowie that I'd never seen before in 1979, where he seems to be just on the street talking to someone.
Okay.
And that person asked him what he thinks of punk rock new wave and stuff like that. And Bowie, without even stopping to think about it, just says, I think it was a very needed enema. I listened to it about four times to check that's what he said. I think it was a very needed or necessary enema.
Okay.
And I assume what he means is for music.
Yes.
That music was bunged up by sort of overblown...
ELP.
Yeah, ELP and whatever, soft rock.
Yeah.
And that in his mind, these represent constipation.
Yeah.
Because that's what an enema clears out, right?
Yeah, right.
And punk was a jet of water... up the arse of music that flushed all that stuff out. But it's an interesting thing. He doesn't even stop to think. It's like, this is what I'm going to say, is that it was a very needed enema.
Because, funnily enough, I saw a clip on TikTok yesterday of Keith Richards being asked what he thought about punk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the same question, I suppose. And partly it's a tribute to what punk, not a trip, you know, like it was so huge, wasn't it? It's hard to remember.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember. But you're not asked, you know, hey, what, David Bowie, what do you think about funk or something or electric? It was just, no other musical form has created that sense, right?
Probably was asked when he thought about funk when he did Young Americans.
Yeah, that's true, actually. And he thought, yeah,
I'll do a whole album.
Yeah, it's really easy, though, because
it's just a groove.
So, is Young Americans any good? I can never work it out. I do love it.
I prefer the Gooster. I think we've discussed this. And is it the Gooster or the Gouster?
It's the Gouster.
Have we done a whole episode about whether it's the Gouster or the Gooster?
We did.
Yeah.
We did a whole episode about a vowel being slightly changed. But Keith Richards says, oh, yeah, there's basically does that version, which is not as clever as Bowie, because Bowie does the right thing by embracing it, saying, yeah, it's kind of cool, but like, I just wish they'd spend a bit more time on their musicianship.
Oh, no, that's...
Which is exactly
Keith
the wrong thing.
Not understanding it.
Yeah. Exactly the wrong thing to say, so...
yeah. Well, I think Keith is a bit more...
I mean, it seemed a bit late, this, but I didn't know you then.
Yeah.
But I'm going to ask you, what do you think about punk, David?
I think it was a very needed enema.
Oh, good.
As was what just happened at the service station.
Yeah. The worst thing would be it's a very unneeded, unwanted enema.
Yeah, that would be bad. It was an enema I really didn't want to have, but it was kind of forced on me.
Yeah, that's no good.
Well,
yeah.
Although, actually, one thing I was thinking as I sat on the toilet...
Oh, my God.
..is in my office, which we've been in, I think our last podcast was recorded in my office, I have a Japanese toilet. Which, as you know, is a toilet that squirts water like an enema rather than having to use toilet paper.
Yeah.
And when you start using them, you do think, well, toilet paper is disgusting and what a terrible way of dealing with it. Environmentally terrible, clearly not as good for your anus as water.
Right.
So that is now what I always think in a normal toilet. It's ruined me for...
Yeah, no, funny enough, I think, I don't know if we've talked about it, but I went to Japan...
Yeah.
Spent some time in old Kyoto. I literally spent some time in old Kyoto, which is a Bowie lyric.
I've spent some time in old Kyoto too.
And there are, as listeners may know, toilets everywhere in Japan. Everywhere.
It's by far the best country in the world.
It's amazing.
For toilet provision.
Incredible.
It's like, if you're caught short in Japan, it's going to be fine.
Well,
there'll be one round the corner.
Do you know there is no Japanese phrase for caught short? I don't know if that's true or not. It's the sort of thing that people say. But they wouldn't use it because you're not.
Yeah, you're just not.
What do you call short?
I know, it's an odd phrase. It's an odd phrase, caught short.
Short. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Entirely. Caught. Anyway, because you can't, because I remember one morning getting the metro to wherever. Well, exactly wherever, because you can't understand, you know, it's quite
hard. You never know where you're going. Yeah. It's very good for toilets, not so good with English signage.
Yeah.
Very bad for English signage.
So we're doing our lucky dip of let's go somewhere. And I thought, oh, I need the loo. in a metro station, which is just bad news, right?
And then, well, it's not bad news in Japan.
No, I looked around and there was...
not only will it be a lot of toilets, they'll be spotless.
They were absolutely spotless. There was, it was there, it was... And then, as, again, you probably know, they not just squirt water and... And there's lots of angles you can have water squirted and all that. They also, if you want, play music.
Yeah, the most extraordinary thing, although someone's going to tell me this doesn't just exist in Japan, but the most extraordinary thing is they have Braille outside. Have you seen that? I mean, not all of them, but some of them do. So for blind people, they'll have a sort of raised, embossed drawing of the toilet outside that you can feel... And so that you know, if you're blind, where the cubicles are. I mean, that's unbelievable and brilliant.
Brilliant. That is exceptional.
I didn't get that it was Braille until someone explained to me, and I spent a lot of time saying, "Wow, why have they got a drawing of the toilet outside the toilet? How hilarious!" But in fact, it's not hilarious.
There's nothing funny about it at all.
It's a very, very good and useful provision. So anyway, the question you asked me was, "What did I think of punk?" Yeah. At the time, I really loved it. And actually still like it a lot. Like, I listened to London's Calling, the whole album recently.
Okay, just can I just stop you there? Brilliant. Now London's you're Calling's falling into that thing which adverts do of
I haven't finished what I'm going to say, but yes, okay.
Yeah, of making punk like the Undertones and even the Clash.
Oh, you think... I think Clash were punk.
I think punk is 6 months, isn't it?
Well, hardcore punk, I suppose. Well, yeah, by the time you got to London Calling, well, you could say that's not punk anymore... Partly because it is quite a complex album musically and all the rest of it, but they still grew out of an incredibly punk band of Clash's first album.
No, they definitely, you can see the join the dots, but I only have that thing where people will say slightly the Americanization of punk, that anything with guitars around that time, like for example Mick Jones was into, I saw another interview and Mick Jones was interviewed and they talked about the Clash being huge and what was that like to be a sort of global phenomenon, and he said, "Oh, it's kind of funny because we can't even play our instruments." You think, yes you can.
Yeah, you totally
can. It's so complicated, the Clash. Yeah. And that's why I never really liked it. I thought it was a bit too clever.
What are you now situating yourself as like a hardcore punk? You're like, they got like five chords, fuck them. That's what you were like.
What, would I do it in that accent? Just because we're talking about punk.
Well, if you're someone who thinks the Clash are too musically complicated, I'm not sure you could do it in any other accent. Well, saying that really? In a posh accent sounds stupid.
Right, okay. Well,
oh, bloody hell, now look, they've done a G. That seems unlikely.
I am definitely more Sex Pistols than I am Clash.
Okay, that's just one album, really.
Yeah, no, but that was the point, wasn't it? It was one moment, and you do maybe one of the definitely top 10 albums of all time, and that's it.
Right.
And you're done.
Okay, I don't know if I completely agree with that.
Have you seen there's an adult store here?
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's interesting, as you drive...
I think I've seen it before.
Yeah, drive to Suffolk, there's an
adult superstore. I know, that seems odd. That seems odd.
Really,
like,
weird.
Like, how much footfall, carfall, must they get? How many people just drive you to Suffolk think, oh, yeah, I'll stop for a...
I know.
What is it as well? Like, I don't understand that. There's one of those on the North Circular.
Is there? Okay.
And I just always think, who is going to sex shops anymore?
Yeah.
When I believe the internet has quite a lot of that on it.
Yeah. No, like, it's completely baffling. And there's
I guess it's toys as well.
Right.
Shall we stop and see?
I don't want to stop and see. Okay. I think that would be bad.
Yeah, also, you'd have to do a U-turn to
and
go back
dreams,
to it now.
Dreams,
which would be, oh, God, the Dreams Jeopardy.
The Dreams
Jeopardy. I'm so sorry, David, but we had to stop for a dildo on the way. He's never going to take that, is he?
So. I am worried. I mean, so it says we'll be there at 12:17.
Okay, so that is Jeopardy, because you told him 12:15.
So we're already 2 minutes late.
Yeah. David will be in your garden thinking, okay, this is not my dream. I'm going to leave this wardrobe.
I think David wants...
Do we have to carry the wardrobe in?
No, so the idea is that...
Is it flat-packed?
No, it's whatever, the three-dimensional, whatever the non-flat-packed version of a thing is.
Built already?
Yeah, it exists.
Yeah.
And he will carry it up to the bedroom.
Okay.
And we've sort of paid for that and everything.
Right.
But I know that... I mean, maybe misjudging, but I know that having paid for that service... It's one of those things that even if you pay for, whether it's John Lewis, it doesn't matter who it is, to take the thing up to where you're having it, however much you pay, it's still an annoying job for someone, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there will definitely be a bit of
sure we should record this because it's so boring. But what I've found
is,
it is almost impossible if you want something delivered to your house to understand whether they will actually deliver it in terms of taking it up or downstairs. Yeah. It's like, well, our fridge is downstairs. Oh, God, this is so
boring.
Isn't
there a thing
our fridge, our fridge is downstairs, and we had to get a new one at one point. And I just could not work out if any company would actually deliver it and carry it downstairs.
It wasn't a flat pack, though.
That not a flat pack really fridge. Annoying. Anyway, can I just say something else? So I did like punk. And I remember listening to John Peel at a time when he was the only person playing God Save the Queen. I'd stayed up till midnight or whatever to listen to him play that.
Right.
And it was all very exciting. And I tried to spike my hair, but didn't know how to do it. I didn't know what backcombing was.
Yeah.
So I basically just put my mum's silver crin on it, and it looked terrible. Yeah, okay. I had a T-shirt that I ripped myself. Ripped it up and put safety pins in it. It looked utter shit, and all the rest of it. And then, unfortunately, a friend of mine, David Gavrin of the Sundays, introduced me to Genesis at exactly the time when the rest of the country hated Genesis, hated prog rock, and they were the least fashionable band in the world. And I thought, I really like this.
Yes.
Shit, that's a problem. I didn't stop liking punk, but I started to like progressive rock and Genesis a lot, and so that was a problem for me at the time.
That is so you're going
I'm sure we've discussed this.
Well, I mean, we've discussed your Genesis, obviously the love of Genesis. Yeah. I didn't realise it came in at that
1976 point. I would say is when David Gavrin played me Wind and Wuthering, and I thought, oh dear, I really like this, that's a problem.
Well, you'd say,
it shows how kind of Catholic, if you like.
Yeah, you can like
I can like both.
What you're saying is you like both, right?
Yeah.
No, I get that. I've actually met recently,
and also can I just tell you one other thing? So people think of punk as like utterly the other end of the spectrum from prog rock.
Yeah.
But do you know, let's see if you can guess, who one of the main people who Johnny Rotten said he built his stage persona on?
Oh.
See if you can guess.
Well, okay.
I've given you a clue.
Yeah, I think what you're going to say is Peter Gabriel.
No.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute.
It's not as obvious in terms of what I've just said as that.
It's going to be a prog figure.
Yeah, it's a prog figure.
Well, of course, I don't really know. I mean, what other prog?
You do. You know
Roger
who this
Waters?
Is? No. It's a stage persona.
Stage persona.
Rather than.
Oh, like.
It's musical.
So it's quite theatrical.
Yes.
Well, it's not. Sorry, it's not Bowie.
No. It is a prog figure, which Bowie prog isn't. Figure.
Well, how many other prog things are there?
You're not going to get it, are you?
I don't. Can you give me the band? Because that would help.
No, well, then that's pointless, then I'm just telling you.
Go on then.
It's Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull.
Oh, really?
Because of the way that Ian Anderson sort of stood, the way that he sort of sneered at the audience, which he did, his whole kind of like slightly like sort of mad, antic way of performing.
Yeah.
And if you look at them, you can see it.
Okay, that's.
But obviously, one is pretending to be a sort of medieval court jester, and the other one is Johnny Rotten.
Yeah. That is an odd thing. I mean, I was talking to my son about Johnny Rotten, who he quite liked. He likes listening to the Sex Pistols. He's 14, and it's still quite exciting to him. And then showing him what he's like now, and there's no way around that. You know, you do get older, and so on and so forth. But whether
although it's a continuum with John Lydon, I think it's all like, obviously, when he was young, it was cool.
Yes.
To be sort of sneery and like, I'm going to just sort of hate everything and be superior and supercilious about everything. It kind of was cool, and now it's not. But it's exactly the same attitude. Also, he's become right-wing and conservative and whatever, but again, even that doesn't feel like that different in a way.
I don't understand why people think the butter advert is a big moment, because that seems to be entirely consistent.
Yeah. Well, it's actually entirely consistent with them doing things like signing to big record labels and...
But didn't he do...
Saying things like, do you ever feel you've been swindled and all that
cheated.
Stuff? Cheated.
The only thing is, with the butter advert, am I right in remembering this? Because we're in the car, we can't really... The only slightly annoying thing is they made a nod to his punkness in the advert.
Did they?
And...
I don't think it's the only slightly annoying thing. My sense is that the butter advert was annoying.
But it was something like... It wasn't this...
I mean, he's annoying.
It was something like, they've got this buttery shit. It's like a bit... It wasn't that. But it was like, there's something about... He's still punk.
Yeah.
And that, I suppose, that was what was annoying about it, not the fact that he advertised butter.
Yeah. Well, he was on Fantasy Football when it was live.
Okay.
On ITV in 1998, I think. And we had to throw him off at half-time because having been very nice, and when I've met him before, he's been very nice, but the minute the cameras were on, he was like swearing and then throwing lit cigarettes at the audience. Yeah. And just generally, yeah. I remember Frank saying, "Let's go to a break and get rid of Johnny." I thought, right.
That is hilarious.
And it was really hard to get rid of him. He had to be basically physically taken out of the audience.
I think around that time, like what I mean is like 1970, so I was 10 in 1970. Okay, so maybe 1975.
That wasn't when that happened, that was 2000.
No, like, I understand 1998, that. I understand that. But punk is, and maybe I've said this before, but I got thrown out of my music lesson.
Right.
No, school assembly, that's what it was. I got thrown out, not thrown out, it wasn't bouncers, but it was just like I had to leave school assembly because the teacher was playing some classical music and held up a picture of the album cover.
Yeah.
And it had presumably Mozart or Beethoven on the front, picture of them, and said to us all, "Who is this?" And this sort of dates it because, like I say, 1975, something like that, I would have been like 8 or something. I shouted out the ultimate act of some rebellion and I said, "Mick Jagger."
When was this? 1978?
No, it would have been like 90, I was like 75 or something.
Oh, right, so you couldn't have shouted Johnny Rock.
No, no, it's before punk. Although, right. In a way, maybe I was one of the first punks by doing that.
No, no, because you, no. Because Mick Jagger is not punky.
No, it's a funny thing to choose, but that was the most outrageous thing I could think of.
Right.
To choose.
Right.
Was Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Who by then was going around nightclubs and just marrying Bianca Jagger.
Yeah.
Was quite a
sort. That's. I could see that.
Also, I got asked to leave for saying that.
But the thing is, I mean, I've not intended to record this much, but you told me the other day, because I didn't realise you were quite such a sort of lord of misrule at school, because you told me the other day that at school, you also were supposed to be listening to a cassette, I think, of Chaucer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was it a cassette?
Yes.
Of Chaucer, The Miller's Tale, perhaps.
No, it was The Knight's Tale.
The Knight's Tale. And you'd replaced it with the theme tune of Animal Magic by Johnny Morris.
Correct.
Which, for anyone who doesn't know, younger listeners, which we don't have, but if you do, is, of course, that.
Most
how did you do that? That's quite
most
a big...
Most importantly, it has that wah-wah guitar, which made it sort of weird.
I mean, that's basically, quite an elaborate.
This, I can tell you exactly. Joke. I can date this more because we were in the fourth.
I'm surprised
year.
By now you weren't expelled. Mick Jagger, then the Animal Magic incident.
This is years later. I think.
Okay.
I don't think it was a pattern of behaviour. I think.
Okay.
So this is in 1983.
Oh, okay.
1982.
So you'd left the bad behaviour for 4 years.
Yeah. No, I was doing O levels by that point, otherwise
right.
known as GCSEs, and we're doing The Knight's Tale for English O level, the run up to English O level. With featuring, as you probably know, Arcite and Palamoun. I've never forgotten that, those
okay,
two.
Okay, I have forgotten.
Knights.
Fine.
To the extent now, without even thinking about it, if someone mentions Marmite, or
yeah.
I see Marmite, I think Marmite. that's what it triggers.
But one of them is not called Marmite.
No, it's called Arcite,
yeah.
And that's spelled Arcite.
Right.
And in my mind.
Right.
In fact, what I do sometimes, and nobody pays any attention to this at home at all, nobody comments on it.
Right.
But if someone says, we're talking about toast, I will say, would anyone like Marmite and Palamoun? Nobody says anything.
I'm not surprised no one says anything, because they must all think.
Say?
They must
what
think that's
say?
The most dad-ness
yeah,
thing
no,
to
it's
do.
Yeah, it's fair, but it's...
I mean, actually, if you didn't know the background, forgetting about Palamoun, whatever his name is, saying...
Palamoun.
Palamoun.
Or
saying,
Palamon, is it?
Saying, would anyone like some Marmite, is just like such a sort of dad
no,
thing
no,
to
I
say.
Get it, I get it. What they don't know is underneath it, there's
yes,
something
there's,
much
there's,
more
there's a whole
interesting than
literary
just, yeah.
backdrop to
so
that.
So I think it's Arcite and Palamon. Palamoun, Palamon, come on.
Anyway, point is, how did you do the...
So Mr. Giddens...
The now legendary switch of
yeah.
the Chaucer tape for Animal Magic.
Mr. Giddens was our English teacher.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant man. Turned me on to Dickens and all sorts. If I was, like, standing for Prime Minister and I did one of those adverts about meeting your old teacher, it would be him.
Right.
I would say Mr. Giddens changed everything.
Right.
And we were going to listen to a cassette of The Knight's Tale. By the way, again... My friend Piers, who was in this class,
yeah.
used to live in a place in Sussex, you can look it up, called Adversane. It's
right.
a little hamlet
okay.
in Biddings, it's called Adversane. And I remember Mr. Giddens, after a school rehearsal, because he took drama as well as English,
yeah.
saying, I can give you a lift back, where are you again? I said, Piers, and he said, Adversane.
Yeah.
And Mr. Giddens said, I can take you to Aladdin Sane, no problem.
Oh.
It was a Bowie reference, really,
wow.
which we loved. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Okay, because I really thought when you went for this digression, don't go for this digression, Tim, because it won't. We'll probably edit this out. But now, one of the quite few Bowie references that we ever get into this podcast, we'll have to keep it.
No, he said Aladdin sane rather than ever sane. It was brilliant. It was like, wow, what a teacher. Anyway, he put the cassette into the sort of boombox type thing, you know, one of those big double cassette recorders.
Yeah.
And then he went out the room, I don't know, to do something.
Yeah.
And we'd been waiting for our moment.
Well, had you, you'd got one ready?
Yeah, so Simon Cade, who I've never mentioned before, I don't think.
No.
Was one of our mates. And he had recorded Animal Magic on a tape. We'd obviously planned this.
Right, wow.
Waiting for our moment. Mr. Giddens walked out the room, or maybe went to the storeroom cupboard. Do you remember there was a storeroom cupboard in B24?
When we had our lessons? Of course,
And he went into the cupboard, and Simon switched it.
Right. So you didn't actually do the switch?
No, it was Simon.
Because when you originally texted me about this, you definitely claimed responsibility.
Oh, well, it was, you know, look, I mean...
I might have to call Simon Cade and say...
I was...
You know, Tim was saying he did this.
There were three of us.
Okay, it was like a gunpowder plot.
Yeah, so we all...
But you're not Guy Fawkes, you're like Catesby.
Very good, good knowledge, yes, that's right. And it went in and played perfectly. It was just a perfect moment. Instead of...
So he came back, Mr... Giddens came back,
pressed
and said,
play.
Right, everyone, now The Knight's Tale by Chaucer. Pressed it.
Yeah.
How long did that play before he said, this music's not what I expected?
I think it was quite quick.
I expected something medieval.
I think it was quite quick. And I think, because he was quite, I don't think it quite had the effect, I mean, it, you know, he was a good, I don't think it sort of created mayhem.
So he didn't say, right, who's done this?
No,
he wasn't. No one is leaving. No one goes home.
No, he wasn't Mr. Walsh.
Okay.
He was Mr. Giddens. Right. And so it felt more, the act of doing it felt like a plan that had come together rather than, we weren't trying to upset him or anything.
Did he get big laughs?
I think it probably wasn't as good as we thought. It probably got sort of, all right, they put the tape in and...
Yeah, he would have probably, seen...
And the
other kids would have seen it happen.
Done it, and they're like, why are you bothering? It's like a long list of things throughout my life, probably yours, where you think, that was funny, wasn't it? People going, sort of.
About like this podcast.
This podcast. Yeah.
What thing I found slightly odd about it, in terms of it being a heist kind of thing that you've planned for a long time, is it totally relied on Mr. Giddens going to the store cupboard? And how did you know he was going to do that?
No, I don't think it totally relied on it. I think... What we knew was we had the tape, we were going to swap it. We knew that it would be to us funny that instead of Chaucerian medieval English, it would be pre-medieval.
Johnny Morris. Actually.
And we obviously got quite obsessed about the theme tune and the sound of it. And we were just waiting for our moment. And I think.
So you'd had that, you know, any minute. Maybe there'd been like a number of playings of Chaucer and he'd not got to the store cupboard. Now he's going to the store cupboard.
It's a good question.
Quickly, Simon.
I suspect that we hadn't thought through exactly how we'd do it, but that we thought there'd be a moment.
And right.
Whether it was the first playing of it, it can't have been. Yeah, we probably knew. We must have known, that's right. That
so after it had got the not great reaction, was there a sort of weird moment where Mr. Giddens, who's a cool teacher, says Aladdin sane, said, that's funny. Yeah, anyway, sorry, can someone get this cassette?
And
can we listen to Chaucer
now? My memory of it is it was more defined by the sort of slight kerfuffle and organisation of can we take the tape out and put the other one
in?
Yeah,
exactly.
Than it was...
And then you just had to sit down and listen to Chaucer.
Than it was a sort of comic... It wasn't the birth of punk, I don't think. I think it was more administrative than that.
Yeah.
And required more practical sorting out.
I'm now going to stop. Okay. So those of you... That's odd. Okay, so those of you who are interested in the exciting jeopardy of Tim arriving in time for Dreams... We've just had a call, which sadly I didn't record. He's really cross.
He's
I mean, to be fair to Tim, it is now 12:23, and he said to the man, we'll be there about 12:15, and the man said, fine. He's now saying, I've been here for an hour, in a really cross voice.
Yeah, I said...
In fact, what he said is, which is worse, I've been here for an hour, but it doesn't matter. And it clearly does. The dreams man is cross.
How long are you going to be? This is the call we've just taken. I'm still processing it. How long are you going to be? And I gave the best news I think you can give anyone, which is, I said, 1 minute, because we are literally 1 minute away from the house.
Yeah.
And instead of saying, great, he said, yeah, I've been waiting here an hour.
Yeah, he did say that. And by the way, just for anyone who's worried, he said, I've had a delivery cancelled, so I'm going to be early. So it's not your fault anyway. You can't help that.
It's definitely... It's really important to the listeners who will be transfixed by every detail of this.
Yeah.
That... We were always due a delivery at 1 o'clock, which is an hour.
So it's now 12:25. So Tim is early.
You know what?
Dreams man, and you know what he's not?
Yeah.
Dreamy. He's really not dreamy.
There's the van.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what?
I'm not going to say anything.
No.
In case he recognises me and thinks, oh, fucking, oh, that cunt.
Yeah, that's typical, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, here we go. We're about... There he is. Oh, he looks... He's got a face like a wet weekend.
Like thunder.
Okay.
Okay.
Good luck, everyone.
Yeah. Is actually recording? Yeah. So, the dreams men have now gone.
That was stressful.
And, yeah, and there's something I need to say about it, which I think was obvious to everyone, which is they definitely thought we were a gay couple. Which
okay.
is totally fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got no issues right. with that. Yeah. And you know, when I was a younger man,
yeah.
I might have thought I need to mention my wife. Well, I didn't felt no need.
No,
I think,
of course
I think
not.
That's totally fine.
I see what you're
but
saying,
I tell you what really didn't help with that. Chip.
Right.
The fact that I was holding
your
dog
right.
and it's a pug.
Right.
It mean, definitely, I mean,
it
we could not have looked, from their point of view,
right.
two burly men
yeah.
Who were quite, you know, been waiting here for a while.
Yeah.
You know, they clearly thought they've come up from London. And
okay.
I think they also clinched it for me. It was a brilliant moment where when the guy left, he said, enjoy your new house. Sort of
yes,
to both
he did.
Of us.
Yeah, yeah.
I felt he was saying that to both of us.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Okay, so I had a slightly different take.
Yeah. I'm surprised you couldn't see that. I got a real
sense. No, that's a good
that,
point.
That when you turned up with another man of about the same age, also
right.
with glasses,
right.
and a small dog,
right.
they were
yeah.
like, okay, we get
okay,
it.
Yeah.
Okay, we get it
yeah,
from
yeah.
them. Yeah.
Yeah, no, okay, I think that's fair, although it didn't... So I thought it was all a bit passive-aggressive and they're a bit grumpy, but
well, they were grumpy, yeah.
They were doing their best to say all the things they had to say, like, enjoy your home and
yeah.
stuff, so...
Yeah, but then I think it might be a little bit like they're... burly working class men, but let's not categorise them unfairly.
No.
They might have thought, oh, they're a gay couple,
right.
we don't want to appear,
yes.
you know,
okay,
like stereotypically
yeah.
homophobic, so we're going to be nice to the gay couple, which they
yeah.
were.
Yeah, no, they were perfect.
They were no nice to the gay couple.
No, they can't really complain. No, what I thought, to lighten the mood,
yeah.
I don't know if you noticed this.
Because I just want to say, in passing, to be fair to them, if that is what they thought, I'm not sure it's that usual for sort of two men to just think like, okay, let's have a weekend together.
Oh, know? I see, yeah, so it's more like...
I did say one
yeah.
thing, which maybe was meant to be a caveat, which is when they were still being a bit grumpy about being late, I said it's my fault he had to pick me up from my house.
Right, I want to pick it... So,
but then they must have thought, well, they don't live together, but they're still a couple.
But the point there is, when you said it's my fault he had to pick me up from my house,
yeah.
I thought, okay, let's lighten the mood.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, it's all his fault, thinking, what I'm really saying is... that guy you'll recognise
yeah.
who, you know, and maybe, again, this is me thinking that maybe they're football fans and
yeah.
they think three lines. And I thought that would lighten it and they'd go, oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah, bloody
shame,
deal.
Bloody, but, you
yeah.
know, or shame about the Euros or
yeah.
something or
yeah.
the World
they
Cup.
Might. Yeah.
And they
yeah.
didn't seem to...
I
like,
mean, there's an opportunity for them
they
to
might
say,
not recognise
you. What you mean you were coming home and it took
yeah.
too long to go
true.
To his house, get it? They didn't do that, no.
Yeah. Well, I've had an hour and a half of pain.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if they did recognise me, which
no.
I'm not sure they did.
No, I don't think they did,
unusually. They might have just thought, oh, I didn't know David Gill was gay.
They
I suppose he is.
Or they might have
I'm absolutely convinced that's what they thought.
Or they might have thought, I thought Ben Elton moved to Australia. so,
But anyway, the point is, we're here
the
now.
Wardrobe's in.
The wardrobe's
yeah.
in. It's quite a weird moment where they would seem to have some quite... It was quite difficult for them to get it up the stairs, or at least up round your
They kept saying
room.
It's difficult.
And I was holding Chip, or Chip was on the lead, and I thought, should I offer to help?
But
that
but this is what we were saying earlier. Taking something upstairs, even if I paid them to do it,
yeah.
is not a fun job. And
no.
they made it really clear it was
yeah.
no fun.
It was no fun.
And I'm thinking, I get that, but that is what you do like,
yeah.
for a living. So,
yeah, but they've been waiting for an hour. But not your fault. Waiting for an hour. Was there any sense in which they understood that it was not your fault?
Yeah, I think they did. I think they were just pissed off. They'd been waiting a long time.
Yeah.
But they didn't...
Do you think...
They didn't make it feel like it was my fault.
Do you think... Like, you might think, well, it's not raining. It's a lovely place to be. You know, is that difficult? Or do they just sit here thinking, fucking hell, we've
yeah.
got to be here, and all we can think is resentment at this rich bloke's second home?
I don't think you know it's a second home, but I take your point.
Well,
I did think for a minute
they,
saying
I
at
bet
least
they do.
At least we're in a nice garden,
yeah.
and it meant nothing to them. They want to get back to
yeah.
where they want to get back to.
Yeah. Where are they going? They told you.
Huntington, which I think was John Major's constituency,
not
wasn't it?
Far.
I didn't want to bring that up either. I think
anyway... It's all worked out.
I can't
okay.
complain. They were very nice. They've taken the... I'll tell you
okay.
one thing.
But I do think it's very fun. I mean, I really think that if they were thinking... I mean, I think Chip just basically would have been the full stop on it.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And again, there's no issue with that. And
there's no
they,
issue
they
with
handle
that.
Themselves
there's
extremely
no
well.
Yeah.
They, if they did have any
you know.
Issues with it, they hid it.
They...
it's the
yeah.
truth.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
We're so used to dealing with those issues.
Yeah.
It's nice
let's,
to have some work.
Let's go in. Didn't.
Okay.
Hello, listeners. We're now safely
Hello.
In Tim's house. Well, it's very nice here. Chip's gone to sleep.
Chip the dog is asleep.
It's a Boston Terrier, if anyone's wondering.
You put a picture of Chip up on Instagram.
Yes,
and that has gone.
And Twitter.
It's one of those ones where...
Oh, it's gone viral.
We then went to make a cup of tea and our lives never never changed.
No, never changed. That's exactly what happened. Yeah.
We never looked back.
Yeah.
Chip has become, I think, sensation doesn't cover it.
No, yeah. I put him on Twitter and Instagram with the revelation that I've never posted in my experience a picture of a pet that isn't a cat. And so it's a big moment for me.
Chip has blown up, which normally would be terrible news. But... He's
fine. He's asleep.
We'll see how many likes.
He might snore in a minute, which you might hear in the background.
Yeah.
Anyway, listeners,
970 likes.
Oh, is that more than listeners that we have for this podcast?
Yeah,
he's bigger. Chip's bigger. You mentioned the podcast. The moon boys.
You've mentioned the podcast on the Instagram.
Yeah, having my time.
And you've got 970 likes, and 988 of them are saying, "What podcast?" So I think that's probably quite.
Is it about dogs? Before we carry on, I thought I'd play you, which I think I can on this phone that I'm recording, but I'm just going to play you David Bowie being asked about punk. All right, here we go.
How important do you think then the sort of the punk and the new wave explosion was to music in the latter of the 70s?
A very important enema.
A very important enema.
Wow.
That's interesting, because my memory was a very necessary enema. I mean, as I say, he doesn't even sort of stop for breath, does he? I'm saying something a bit strange and the interviewer doesn't say, what do you mean?
It makes it sound like what he's really saying is, as I'm constantly saying, an important enema. Like, as if, how many times do I have to say this?
Yeah. Or it's a phrase I know is overused.
It does.
In conversation of all sorts. But I'm sorry, I've got to use it again. Exactly. It's an important enema.
As the cliche goes.
Yeah.
But also, now that we know he says important enema, you wonder, has he had some unimportant enemas? And what are those?
Yeah, because for me, if I was going to have an enema, it would always have to be quite important.
I think as his
I'm never having a casual enema.
Right. As his doctor, I'd say, I think you're having too many enemas. Because if some are more important than others.
Yeah. I mean, let's not forget that David probably, I don't know if he needed any enemas, but he certainly ingested a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Although most of the time that was involved not eating.
Yeah.
He was just having milk and cocaine.
Right.
So I imagine... He didn't have any important enemas.
I imagine he had some really quick enemas not much, you know, there wasn't an awful lot to show for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite unusual for David to say anything. He doesn't really say gross things very often, does he?
Right, yeah.
Ozzy Osbourne, who you imagine says gross things all the time.
Okay, so there's a slightly sadder tinge to this, it occurs to me, which is, do you think what he's doing is wanting to be a bit punk himself? And so he's using slightly scatological, slightly...
No.
Yeah, it's an enema. And in which case, he's got it slightly wrong, because it's a bit...
Yeah, because it's... Well, I don't know.
I think there might be something punk about his response.
Maybe. I mean, it's a question then to be asked is that something that John Lydon would have said? If someone asked John Lydon in 1979, what do you think now about sex? It's a very important enema, wouldn't it? That's my John Lydon impression.
Amazing.
Yeah, he's not in the room.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think it might be a bit like he wants to be a bit scatological.
But he doesn't do it in a very punky way.
No, he doesn't.
He does it in a very straight way.
Yeah.
Should we listen? Because I haven't heard this.
Yeah.
He talks about punk in a separate one.
Yeah, it does go on for 3 minutes.
Well, we can hear a bit of it and see how far we want to
see. Let's see what he's got to say for himself here.
He's from Detroit, is he not?
Bet your life, yeah. Yes, from a trailer camp, in fact. He was.
They're talking about Iggy Pop.
Interesting to note that the punk movement is generally pinned on England.
Yes, well, I think, I really feel that Iggy had an awful lot to do with it. And the whole look of his band, the whole feeling, what they were saying, the way they were throwing abuse out and sort of they wouldn't tolerate anybody. They didn't want to be liked, they didn't want to be hated. I mean, the whole feeling of it had the same kind of energy that the punk movement first had in the middle to late 70s.
Can we stop it there a minute?
Yeah.
Before I forget it. There's an odd moment in that where, talking about Iggy Pop and the Stooges, he said, they didn't want to be liked, fine, yeah, punk, they didn't want to be liked, and they were kind of, you know, tearing the place up, whatever. Then he says, they didn't want to be hated. Like, oh. So what, they just wanted to be kind of accepted in a kind of midway, you know.
You do think... I mean, for me, the problem there is you've got that... I understand what he means about Iggy being important, but you've got... Whenever you hear punk talked about in an American context, it's always a bit depressing, isn't it?
It's not proper punk.
It's...
Yeah, no, the whole punk thing in America is a bit embarrassing, and particularly the sense that Americans want to do, of like, we kind of did it first with the Ramones. Well, they weren't really punk.
No.
They were just sort of power pop, rockabilly,
well, otherwise, whatever. We would...
And Richard Hell and the Voidoids are mentioned, but they're just... He just had a silly name.
We'd be in no doubt it was punk, would we? Wouldn't need to say punk definitely started with Iggy Pop. Everyone would be thinking that, but it didn't.
Iggy Pop is not punk either.
No.
I mean, you know, he was a loud, sort of hard rock, shouty... thing,
yes.
But in the sense that punk owed something to heavy metal, which it did,
right?
It probably owed something to American garage rock as well.
Yeah,
but it's not the Sex Pistols.
I'm glad they didn't ask us what we think about punk, because I think they'd have been bored. Important Enema's definitely.
Yeah.
You can see why he ended up saying, "I tell you what, I'm just going to do the Important Enema line."
Yeah, yeah.
That is a bit more.
Also, I think it's quite unlikely in 1979 when that question was asked that they'd have come and asked us. I mean, how old were you?
In what year? 79?
Yes.
11,
yeah. It's unlikely.
Yeah.
Can I ask you something, actually, which is, this has to bring up your baldness.
Mm.
But do you think there's something a little bit unfair about punk, which is you could not be a punk rocker unless you could spike your hair?
Right.
Like, there's not, like, it's impossible to be a punk rocker if you couldn't spike your hair, right? That was then almost maybe that and safety pins, right?
Yeah.
But there must have been people who went bald quite early.
Yeah.
Maybe in their early 20s, even. Like, my dad went bald when he was 26, right? Yeah. He's not his early 20s, but he's his 20s, right?
Yeah, it's actually late
20s. Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's not embarrassing to be a punk in your 20s, right? Mm. But you might be bald. Mm. Think that you might be thinking, well, this is not fair. I really want to be a punk, but the number one signifier, I just can't do.
And I think that would be a terrible kind of vortex to be trapped in, because that would have the effect of making you more angry and more anti your system. And then you'd think, I need a musical form to articulate that anger. And they'd say, sorry, mate.
You're bald,
so this is the form, and then it would get worse. So, I imagine...
Because there were no bald punk rockers.
No, I think...
The nearest I can think of is Joe Jackson, who wasn't a punk rocker, he was New Wave.
Wow, this is the other sort of punk New Wave thing, isn't it? Which is they sort of... People say punk and New Wave. Think, no, like, you can't talk about both in the same sentence, can you? They're completely different.
No, I don't agree with that.
Joe Jackson...
I don't agree with that.
Right.
We've got my friend Tracy McLeod coming, who will help with this, because she actually went out... with a lot of the people who were sort of New Wave, notably Nick Lowe, she went out with. And she went out with Richard Jobson of the Skids, who's kind of New Wave as well.
Yeah.
But I don't think New Wave wouldn't have existed without punk. So the sort of attitude of people like Elvis Costello and Joe Jackson and whatever, it's very punk-infused, but the music's very different,
We should say that in this Suffolk village, there's quite a lot of sort of media type people living, and so Tracy lives around the corner, isn't she? That's why she's popping by, like in House Party.
Yes, she is popping by. She's not a very old friend of mine, Tracy McLeod. She used to present The Late Show, and I've suggested that she pop round mainly because she said I'll bring tea and cakes.
Yeah,
but also because I thought actually Tracy knows a lot about music, and also has gone out with, which neither of us have. Neither of us can say that we have or will ever. Go out with certainly a male pop star of the type iconic sort that we often discuss on this podcast.
No, never will.
Never have, never probably will. But what I would say is the key thing about a lot of new wave stuff is that there was, as we know, a whole group of men mainly playing pub rock in 1973. Nick Lowe, Dave Edmunds, Elvis Costello, Ian Dury, people like that. And that meant they were just playing sort of American roots style band music in pubs. Then in 1976, Sex Pistols happened. And after that, they sort of said, oh, we should have the same kind of attitude of that and pretend that we're part. They're not. They just carried on playing the same kind of music.
Right.
You know, because Dave Edmunds does, Girl Talk. That's just a song from any time.
I think that might be a terrible song in the end.
It's terrible. It's quite catchy.
It's quite catchy, I suppose.
It's quite catchy, but it's not.
Yeah.
What makes it new wave? It's kind of nothing.
Yes.
Although, what connects listeners, what connects David Bowie, our principal thing of conversation, our principal thing that we talk about, although we don't a lot of the time, but when we do, we do, and Nick Lowe, and you got it quite quickly.
Yeah, no, it's a song title.
Yeah.
What we know, the only thing I know Nick Lowe for is Breaking Glass. I love the sound of Breaking Glass.
Is that the only song you know by him? No, you must know.
And he lives in Kew near me.
Right.
But I've never met him.
Okay. What's so funny about Peace, Love and Understanding?
Was that him?
Yeah.
But that wasn't his song.
Well, it's written by Elvis Costello, but he did a very famous version of it.
Okay.
Also, he did the theme tune to The Sopranos.
Did he?
Yeah, well, the finishing theme tune.
Right, right.
I think the opening theme tune is "Got to Serve Somebody." It's two different songs.
Oh, the end credits.
The end credits is "The Beast in Me," which is a brilliant song.
Okay.
But the opening is "Got to Serve Somebody," which is a different song.
So that is all I know. That song is it called "I Love the Sound of Breaking Glass"?
Yes.
Okay. And obviously Bowie had a song called "Breaking Glass."
Yeah, but that's weird, isn't it? That's weird. It's the same kind of time. Well, more or less, I think.
Yeah, so Low would have been... 77.
Yeah.
And I feel like I Love the Sound of Breaking Glass was like 79.
Yeah, but what is... Well, it's possible that one was influenced by the other, but what... Like, Breaking Glass kind of a horrible thing,
right?
Hang on,
right? There's another Breaking Glass, isn't there?
By...
Hazel O'Connor. That was a film, wasn't it?
That was a film, and possibly an album.
Called Breaking Glass, no?
Yes.
Is that separate from the other two?
I don't know, but the main thing I think about Hazel O'Connor is in a very, very kind of big, bold, melodramatic torch song.
Yeah.
Called Will You? Is it what's it
Will
called?
Will You, yeah.
Is it Will You?
Was it called?
Is it not Will You? Yeah. Shit. We should know this. I think it's But anyway, Will You. There's a line which goes, "I spilled my tea, oh silly me."
That's right.
I've always thought that's very funny.
Yeah.
Like anyone would actually say, "Oh silly me."
Yeah.
they spilled their tea. Especially because it's a very dramatic song.
Yeah. It's a beautiful song, isn't it?
I like it, yeah. It definitely does have the lines, "I spill my tea."
Yeah, I almost had that.
Anyway, moment. Could you just get up while you're on your phone?
Yeah.
Would you mind getting up the lyrics to "I Love the Sound of Breaking Glass" by Nick Lowe? Because I only know "I Love the Sound of Breaking Glass." Is it "Deep Inside My Room"?
It's "Deep Into the Night," isn't it?
Deep Into the Night. Yes, I'm now mixing it with
the Bowie one, which of course is...
But here's the thing. Can I just say before you find the lyrics, because the lyrics might explain it.
Yeah.
So... Let's be honest, breaking glass in general is something that's a bit, at the very least, like a bit annoying and Jeopardy inducing, and at worst, really frightening because someone's done it at night at your window, right? So there's no situation in normal life where breaking glass is a good thing, right?
I would say, yeah.
But here are two songs in which people kind of enjoy breaking glass.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I would say, having looked at the lyrics here, this is where New Wave is a sort of punk relative, because if you read these lyrics...
Yeah, they sound a bit a bit angry.
Yeah, they're sort of nihilistic. I love the sound of breaking glass, especially when I'm lonely.
Right.
I need the noises of destruction when there's nothing new.
Yes, it's a punk, so it's punk lyrics.
Yeah.
But it's not at all like that as a punk song, because it's, "I love the sound of breaking glass."
Yeah, yeah. And then in the second verse, "I love the sound of breaking glass deep into the night. I love the sound of its condition, flying all around." I'd say that needs work. and then it repeats itself, basically. And there's a middle eight, I think, "Oh, change of mind, a change of mind." So basically it's slightly...
What's it about?
I'd say just about boredom. It's quite punk. And of course, that's what the Bowie Breaking Glass is really...
It's not about boredom.
Well, it's about being in his room...
No, I think Breaking Glass is a much more sinister song.
Right.
I think Breaking Glass is about Bowie when he's most paranoid and drug-addled.
Yes. Yeah, no, good.
And,
yeah.
Like, thinking of terrible Kabbalah-based sort of... You know, he thought... He started reading the Kabbalah, which is this sort of old Jewish mystical stuff, and started thinking that the world... I don't know.
Well,
all really mad shit. Started thinking all mad shit.
When you look at the Breaking Glass lyrics of Bowie, it is almost haiku-like. There's hardly any lyrics.
Yeah, I know.
"Baby, I've been breaking glass in your room again. Listen, don't look at the carpet.
I drew something awful
on it," which is the devil worshipping.
Well, we have discussed this. Yeah. Definitely in a previous time, we discussed what it might be.
Yeah.
I think I said, "Was it a big cock with spunk coming out of it?" Right. I think.
Yeah. You're such a wonderful
If I didn't
person.
Say that, yeah. I'm saying it again because I think it's still funny.
Was it? Well, it doesn't reveal anything. I'm assuming it wasn't that. It was supposedly the thing he did with Jimmy Page.
Or something. Like a sort of Aleister Crowley thing.
Yeah. So both are similarly nihilistic and slightly...
If you were the woman being referred to...
Yeah.
It's a woman, isn't it? Who's it addressed to?
Baby.
Well, I think that's a woman.
I mean, yeah, probably.
Let's assume that's a woman, right? Don't look at your car. I mean, it's a bad moment for her.
It's a terrible...
Because not only has she come in and presumed the windows are all smashed and the glass is strewn everywhere, so she can't hoover.
Yeah.
Because you can't look at the carpet. And you can't... It's possible to hoover without looking at the carpet.
It's like a really, really dark version of the Yellow Pages ad, isn't it? Where it's the French polisher.
The French polisher, Yellow Pages ad.
And basically, she's come back and said, "Everything okay?" And he could do it in a slightly different way, which is, if it was more reasonable, but with the same lyrics. He could say, "Fine, don't look at the carpet, because I draw something awful on it.
Yeah.
And I have been breaking glass in your room again."
Yeah.
But trying to make it sound more...
It's really an abusive relationship.
You can't cover up how badly behaved he's been. Yeah.
I mean, actually, if you're in an abusive relationship, I imagine. It's quite unusual for the abuser to say, look, I'm sorry, look, try this. Here's what might help, right? Don't look at the carpet. And, you know, I'm sorry, but there's like a lot of broken glass as well. Can I just take a little sidebar, since you mentioned the Yellow Pages advert, and tell you something, which is I'm writing a sort of memoir based on my family show that I did. Right. And people may know this or not, but quite a lot of that is about the fact that my mum had an affair with a golfing memorabilia salesman and transformed her lives over to golf and started a golfing memorabilia business herself, even though she wasn't really interested in golf, but convinced herself she was because she was so obsessed with this bloke. It's a long and complicated but funny story. Anyway, that's Chip snoring. One thing I didn't discover this, I knew it existed, but I've listened to them properly, is my mum, she was so obsessed with this guy and such a hoarder anyway, she wanted to sort of hoard their conversations. So she kept cassettes of their conversation, which she was secretly recording on her answer phone.
Wow.
Because in the old days, answer phones used to basically be just cassette machines. Right. They weren't digital. They just had cassettes in them. And the record would come on automatically and normally...
Like Linda Tripp.
I guess, yeah. Yeah. I don't really know how my mum did it, to be honest, technically, because I don't remember exactly what they were like. But basically, she would just keep the record button pressed.
Yeah.
Right? Longer, like if she picked up the phone, that's the point, is that normally it's just someone leaving a message, right?
Yeah.
But she would keep it pressed when she's actually speaking to him.
Yeah.
So I have about 20 cassettes, mainly of conversations with her and him.
That's mad.
Right? Yeah. It's incredible. And then also quite a lot of my dad picking up the phone to him sometimes. There's one of Ivor, my brother. I haven't found me so far.
Right.
But I'm sure I am there because I haven't listened to them all.
Yeah.
Anyway, the reason I bring it up is I try and explain to people sometimes how mad this was. Because my mother was obsessed with this bloke, but she did really set up a golfing memorabilia business. And I know this particularly because suddenly one of the people calling her was Peter Alice.
Amazing.
Do you know who that is?
Yeah.
So Peter Alice, this will, by the way, connect with what you're saying in a minute. Peter Alice, who, if anybody doesn't know, was the BBC's most famous golf commentator, calls my mum. My mum immediately puts on a kind of posh voice when she goes, oh, Peter, lovely to hear from you. And he says, Sarah, that's my mum. Sarah, do you have a copy of my first autobiography? The one I wrote in 1981. It's obviously written more than one.
Right.
Because I've got some people staying at the moment and I can't put my hands on a copy. I really want to give them one. Do you have a copy? Right. And my mum says, oh, maybe I've got one in the shop and blah, blah, blah. And the reason I mentioned it to you after you mentioned the Yellow Pages advert is I have written in my book, who the fuck is he, J.R. Hartley? Right? Because what is Peter Alice doing looking for a copy of his autobiography?
That is incredible.
Surely he can get hold of one without looking, going to a shop, which is what my mother basically ran, a golfing memorabilia shop for it.
That's amazing. And also, how desperately does he want to give it to, think of something else.
Yeah.
I don't have an autobiography lying around, so I'll just get them some wine or something. But like,
possible, I hadn't thought this until you mentioned that, is it possible that his guests in no way wanted an autobiography, but Peter Ellis thinks, I know what they want. They want a copy of my autobiography.
And of the 1981 one.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah. I found a copy of it.
Right.
I found a copy of it.
Any highlights?
No, I haven't read it. I just found a copy of it amongst my mum's stuff. Mm. So she must have had a copy and given Peter Ellis another copy. Mm. But it's so brilliant. It's one of the...
Do you think...
I laughed and laughed when he said, hello, it's Peter Ellis
here. That is amazing.
I thought, have you managed, mother, to get from the point of just basically shagging this bloke, and because she was a mad obsessive, my mother, not being able to just shag him, but to turn and our lives over to his hobby... as a kind of in homage to him, an extent that the BBC's commentator is phoning you for his autobiography.
He is... It's like if you somehow decided to do a punk memorabilia thing and one day John Lydon phoned up. It's like, oh my God, you've arrived.
It's a bit like except what you need to be thinking is that you would be sleeping with, I don't know, Jonathan Ross, somebody who's obsessed with punk.
Right. Okay.
And you're not that interested in punk, but you want so much to impress Jonathan Ross
that you're
saying, I'm now obsessed with punk and I've started a shop, Jonathan, selling punk memorabilia.
If you were in prison for like a long time, so let's say, for sake of argument, you're a paedophile, for the sake of this argument, and you're in prison for 20 years and life, given what you did...
Well, as you know, Gary Glitter's just come out of prison and very much hasn't served 20 years.
No, but let's just say it was unspeakable.
Yeah.
And so you're definitely getting life, right? We don't need to go over what you did.
Okay.
And you're in prison.
That's best.
You're in prison. I don't really know how this works, but basically you get to that thing and they say you can have a book with you.
Right. Is this just like Desert Island Discs, but prison island
discs? Well, it's slightly... That'd be good, wouldn't it? No, it's the same as Desert
it's
Island.
It's the same, yeah. Except not as nice to think about.
Exactly, and the luxury like has to be like very narrowly defined.
Yeah,
like,
we can get some porridge.
Basically. Yeah. And they said, well, you're here for...
Actually, I don't think they've served porridge in prison since to get
no, and anyway, that's exactly what you wouldn't need to bring. Yeah. It's like, no, what I meant was, you can't say, I'll have a record player. Like,
are you allowed to bring a luxury into prison?
That's what I mean. It would have to be... what could you bring in?
I don't know. I don't know what you're allowed to bring into prison. No, I mean, books. Virtually. You are allowed to bring
maybe
books.
A book.
Yeah.
So it would be Desert Island. It would be Prison Island book. Prison. Yeah. Prison Island.
Okay. So
book.
Someone's in prison for a long time.
Anyway, you're in prison for a long time. Well, it's important that it's you because I need you to get into the
right
headspace. And they say, I tell you, you say, oh my God, I've got 30 years here. I can't bear it. Solitary.
Yeah.
And the prison guard says, oh, after he's probably sung three lines at you, he goes, well, look on the bright side, you've got a book in there. And you're like, okay. And the book is Peter Alice's 1981 autobiography.
Yeah.
Do you think over time you would learn to absolutely love the book? Like, would you love it because it was just
the only
all
book
you had? And it was yeah. like you really loved
it. Isn't there, but
to
there's
it.
A film like this?
Probably, is it?
Yeah. Well, I saw a terrible film at Jonathan Ross's house.
Right.
Called Barbarian, a horror film about a sort of monster woman who's been born in a basement and she's only watched one video
okay.
her whole life. And so
what's the video?
It's a sort of nursing video. And so she basically is kidnapping people and turning them into her babies. It's sort of, it's a hideous film. But I've seen sort of that film idea before okay. that people's whole lives are just based on sort of one okay. thing that they've seen.
Okay.
But no, I don't know if I would love the Peter Alice book.
Because I can tell you, this is not quite prison, but years ago we rented a house in the south of France for holiday.
Right.
And the kids were really, really little.
Should we do something about Chip's
story?
I think it might get distracting. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's quite sweet.
Yeah, no, but if it's like, oh, Chip, I'm sorry. I'm going to put him out in the kitchen.
Okay. Can I just say that I've seen more of Tim's arse crack this weekend than I've seen sort of ever. He seems not... I've mentioned it a few times, and he's just not pulled his trousers up, and I don't really know why that is.
Right.
I don't know if
I hope the one thing you haven't talked about is my arse crack. Right,
I mean, if you followed this whole podcast, I don't know, we might have split it into two, but earlier on... We were discussing how the two delivery men assume we're probably gay men. And I don't know, maybe Tim's decided that, we are and they're trying to entice
us. Right, no, I don't... Hang on, the dog's back.
Dog's back.
But I put him in the kitchen.
He'll be all right for a minute because he won't fall straight back to sleep again, will he? Or maybe he will.
Yeah, he will. He can go straight back to sleep.
Okay.
I'm going to close the door.
Well, you start whining in a terrible way.
No, he won't do that.
He won't do that.
He'll be fine. So, we were in the south of France in a... villa type thing, and the kids were really little, and we were very busy. And then, so at night, it was like, oh, you could relax, but there was nothing to do. Like, we're in the middle of nowhere.
Mm.
And there were like a couple of books there, and one of them was Jeffrey Archer's Prison. Weirdly,
oh,
it was
right.
a prison theme, but it's not.
What's the book?
It was his prison diary.
Oh, okay.
About his diary of being in prison.
Okay.
And I thought it was the most fascinating. I like, really got into it because there wasn't really anything else to do.
Right.
And I absolutely loved it.
Right.
And then I looked at it a few years later, I thought it was terrible. But during that time when I was...
Right.
So I think you might love Peter Alice's book if you were in prison.
Okay. Well, it's an odd scenario. Shall we stop for the minute? Because if Tracy comes...
Oh, yeah.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.